Hey listeners, my fabulous colleagues Amy Bernstein and Amy Gallo are back with a new season of Women at Work. You know, it's your guide to whatever you're facing at work, from anxiety to Gen AI. Listen to new episodes of Women at Work every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the HBR IPA cast from Harvard Business Review. I'm Sarah Green Carmichael. I have a pretty nice view from my office. Trees, the sky, some hills in the distance. But it's nowhere near the view that Scott Kelly had. He could look out his window and see the graceful blue curve of planet Earth. The retired NASA astronaut had that view for 520 days. But Kelly wasn't up there just to look out the window. He was up there to do his job. On the International Space Station, he had to route cables for new docking ports, perform science experiments, work with astronauts and mission control centers from other countries, and yes, just fix the cooling system. Kelly's role as space station commander required extraordinary cross-cultural collaboration. It meant being prepared to make decisions in life or death scenarios, and it meant just getting stuff done and getting along with the crew. Kelly may have won his insights in space, but he has management and career advice for those of us who are stuck here on Earth. His new memoir is Endurance, A Year in Space, A Lifetime of Discovery. He was interviewed by HBR assistant editor Josh Olejarz, who as a kid dreamed of becoming an astronaut.
When you're in space, does it feel like a job? Does it feel like you're at work?
Yeah, it feels like when you wake up, you're at work, and when you go to sleep, you're still at work. It feels like you're living in your office, but it's an incredible office, right? Got an incredible view. The feeling of floating is fun and liberating, but also makes things much harder to do.
When you're in space and you can't get away from your coworkers, the other astronauts, you know, if someone annoys you, you know, what do you do?
I think the people are pre-selected to get along with each other. There are a lot of people that are my very close friends, family, people I know, people I worked with. They wouldn't do well. But NASA and our international partners pick people that can deal well with being in close quarters with other people. They work well together. They're good teammates. They're good leaders. They're good followers. So the potential for conflict is very low. But you deal with it. You know, you have your own private space if you need to get away. I'm sure people vent to the folks on the ground. We talk to a psychiatrist, psychologist every couple of weeks. They ask us, you know, every time, how are your crew members getting along? How are they doing? How are you dealing with them? Anything they do that is bothering you? I've never really personally experienced much conflict, almost no conflict in space. You know, occasionally someone will do something to get on your nerves, but then you realize you're probably doing shit to get on their nerves too.
There are a number of countries collaborating on the International Space Station. Does it feel like you're working specifically for the U.S., or is there any kind of feeling of working for the whole planet?
You definitely feel like you are a representative of the whole planet. You do work for all the different partner agencies. You know, I'll do a Japanese experiment. I'll be fixing something in the European module. I launch on the Russian Soyuz. But at the end of the day, I'm a NASA astronaut. I represent the U.S. government. But I do feel an extension of the civilization of planet Earth, representing all the people.
How do you build relationships across cultures when you're working with astronauts from other countries? And I'm especially curious if it's someone who's from a country where the politics there might be a little bit complicated.
Yeah, so, you know, that's what's one of the great things about this program is it's an international program and you get to pull on, you know, the strengths of people with different backgrounds than you have. And there's potential for conflict and challenges there, particularly like, you know, with the Russians that we're not always the friendliest with. But in space, you set all that aside because you rely on those cosmonauts and the cosmonauts rely on us for a lot of things, including our lives.
What do you think are the larger benefits of that kind of close collaboration?
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, one reason we brought the Russians in this in the beginning was after the Soviet Union went away, we thought it would benefit us by having their rocket scientists occupied with something peaceful versus something nefarious like nuclear weapons program or building missiles for our enemies. But I think it also is an example that, you know, even when you are not the greatest of friends, you could work together for something you both believe in, feel strongly about, and has mutual benefit to all of us. And space is a great place to do that because no one owns it. It's a, you know, a common ground where peaceful scientific collaboration can occur, and it continues to despite the conflict we have at times between our governments.
Is there anything specific about space travel that helps you build those relationships, or does it tend to happen pretty naturally once you're training together?
How much you spend training with somebody is not always consistent. So I've flown in space with people that I had very little personal experience with. One guy I've been in space with, I didn't even know what he looked like until he arrived. So building relationships with those people definitely happens in space. I mean, when you're doing something that is challenging and in many ways, physically, emotionally, technically, but also risky, is a way to bring people closer together and appreciate, you know, the privilege that we have in being able to represent our countries doing this.
You mentioned that this is kind of your office and you can't really leave this office for long periods of time. So how do you deal with stress and burnout up there?
You know, exercise helps. You know, having a good sounding board at home helps. But people handle that much differently. One of the reasons why I was probably, you know, asked to do this was because of how well I handle those kind of things. You know, I had a 6-month flight and I didn't go crazy or cause major issues with, you know, interpersonal conflicts with the ground or my fellow crew members, which sometimes isn't the case. So I think in some ways I was like pre-selected to deal with the stress.
Are there any techniques you developed while you're in space to help with that?
Like yoga? It depends on what the stress was from, right? If I was felt like I was being stressed because the ground was asking me to do something that I felt like it didn't make sense, which sometimes is the case when you're in space, I would always feel obligated to say, hey, we could do this better this way, or maybe we shouldn't be doing this at all. But in the end, I would always try to remind myself of the big picture. And the big picture was, hey, I'm a government employee. I'm going to be here for so much time. I'm going to be paid a certain amount. And whether I do this thing that makes no sense or whether I do something that makes more sense to me, it doesn't really matter. You know, as long as it's not a safety issue. So sometimes you just got to go with the flow.
Is it easy to forget how dangerous it is to be in space when you're up there? Do you get used to that or are you constantly aware of it?
You're always aware that you could always have an emergency that could kill you, but you're not always thinking about it because that wouldn't be a good way to live. I've never been in combat, but it's not like you're being shot at clearly, right?
So are there performance reviews in space? How do you get judged when you're up there?
You have those periodically through your career, but you have them after each space flight. It's kind of like a peer review system almost. And then the management folks take those inputs and then make a recommendation for your future.
Does an astronaut ever get an F on this thing? Like, is it just straight A's across the board?
Yeah, we have people come back from space and they're told they'll never find space again because they screwed it up so bad. Absolutely. But there's all different levels. Like, some people will come back and they'll say, okay, well, you know, you did a good job, but we don't see you as being the commander of the space station, so you're probably never going to fly in space again because we got a lot of other guys like you that we can assign that haven't flown yet. So no, they don't all get stellar reviews.
What's the best feedback you ever got from another astronaut?
The one feedback I remember, my first long-duration flight, Katie Coleman that I was up there with said, you know, I need to be more open to the idea of engaging the public and what we're doing up here because it's their space program, they're the taxpayers, they need to be involved. And at the time, I just looked at it as, you know, I'm really up here to do one job, and that is to complete the procedure that's on my checklist and then move on to the next thing. And that doesn't, you know, involve voluntarily, you know, engaging the public. But, you know, I took her advice on my next flight, and she was absolutely right.
What surprised you about yourself? Like, what have you learned about yourself that you said, oh, I didn't realize I could do that?
You know, one thing I think that I've learned over my course of time on the space station is that I'm reluctant to sound like I'm bragging or saying what I'm good at, but I did recognize that I have a really good way of prioritizing what's important and what's not, and putting a lot of focus and energy on the stuff that needs to get done right, and then not caring about the stuff that doesn't matter. And I've noticed a lot of my colleagues don't have that same capability. You know, they're this type A personality that they have to do everything perfect all the time. And you can't do that for a year in space. So I have a good balance of, you know, understanding when to work really, really hard and when you don't have to work hard at all.
How has your leadership style changed over time?
You know, I don't know that it's changed, but I'm much more aware of what it is. I think my leadership style is based on the situation. If there's a fire on the space station, my leadership style is those of a tyrant. Tell people what to do, and I don't want any questions. Depending on the level of importance and what it is, my leadership style is more collaborative. Sometimes it's, I delegate things to other people. I just think it depends on the situation.
Can you talk about that a bit more? I'm curious, just so much of space travel is so dangerous. Sometimes the stakes are just life and death. So how does that affect how you make decisions?
Well, if the decision is, when are we going to have Christmas dinner? Like what time? I would say, hey, when do you guys want to have dinner? But if the atmosphere is leaving the space station, I'd say, hey, we've got to close these hatches or we're all going to die.
It's not so much time there to build consensus.
Exactly.
Obviously, it's incredibly competitive to become an astronaut. So how do you work toward a goal that so few people are going to accomplish?
I think you need to recognize that there are real people and these are real jobs and people get them. And even though the odds are against you, they're as much against you as they are everybody else. Keep plugging away. I knew I wanted to do this, but I also recognized that I may never have the chance. I would have been content with continuing my Navy career. My goal was eventually to be a CO of an aircraft carrier, and I would have been happy if I would have gotten to do that too. And so, I think it's important for people that want to be astronauts to choose a career field that they want to be in because they're interested in it, not because it's going to help them become an astronaut, because, like I said, odds are against them just as much as they're against everybody else. If you don't wind up being an astronaut, then having a job that you like is going to be very important.
What do you think is the biggest misconception about being an astronaut or the work?
Yeah, the biggest misconception is that the job of being an astronaut is flying in space. That's a very small part of the job. When you're out in space, you're kind of working as an engineer in the space program for issues that are related to the astronauts and the safety of the astronauts and supporting the people that are flying in different capacities, training for missions, studying, public outreach and speaking. It's a lot of different jobs, which is what makes it great. And I've spent a lot of time in space, but, I was an astronaut for 20 years, and I spent a year and a half of it in space. So some guys are an astronaut for 10 or 15 years and might only spend a week in space. So it's not all about flying in space.
What are your favorite parts of being an astronaut, and what are your least favorite parts?
My favorite part is that it's really, really hard, really challenging, and you got to put a lot into it, and you need the help of many, many people on the ground and in space to do it. So there's a lot of teamwork, a lot of collaboration. Now, having said that, the launch, the landing, spacewalk is fun after you're done. Not always fun while you're doing it. The view is great. Floating around is great. For the most part, makes most things hard, but it's fun. For me, the best part of it is the challenge of doing something incredibly complicated, incredibly risky, and then working hard at it and being successful.
Why is it so important for us to keep going to space or to try to go to Mars?
Well, a number of reasons. You know, when we do the most challenging, technically complicated things, we get benefits on Earth from doing that. The easy example is the size of the iPhone in your pocket. Telecommunications technology, that stuff was invented for the space program. You know, I think we're naturally explorers. I think we need to explore over the horizon, whether that's Mars or after Mars, it'll be somewhere else. And then motivating kids, you know. Right now, I think we're spending $5 to $6 billion a year on human spaceflight. If the only thing we got out of that, and it is not the only thing, but if the only thing we got out of it was the fact that every kid in the United States can say that they're going to do their science, engineering, math homework because they want to be an astronaut someday. If that was the only reason, then that's worth the $5 or $6 billion a year, because a lot of those kids won't become astronauts, but they're going to become something else. They're going to become an important scientist and an engineer and work in industries that grow our economy and that are critical.
And there are a lot of private companies now that are doing a commercial spaceflight too, or preparing for commercial spaceflight. There's SpaceX and Blue Origin and others. I'm wondering if you think that the point of going to space changes if commercial companies are involved.
I think these commercial guys are great, and it gives NASA the extra bandwidth, as an example, turn low Earth orbit access and spaceflight in low Earth orbit over to private companies or public companies, whatever kind they are. That allows NASA to go do other things that are more outrageous, risky, and exploration-based.
As opposed to trying to colonize Mars, for example, is there something different about space if space tourism is the point?
Well, I think space tourism would be a great thing, and I think we'll have that eventually. You know, it's not for everybody, but I think a lot of people would enjoy it. You know, having access to low Earth orbit, you could maybe make a business case for that. I don't know. I'm not a business guy, but, you know, but right now, clearly it's very expensive to get there and work there, but, you know, it's not always going to be.
Yeah, once it gets cheaper, I'll be one of the first to sign up.
Yeah, I'll be right behind you.
Why did you retire when you did?
I had a lot of other opportunities, you know. Yeah, I'd flown in space 4 times. Probably could have flown again, but it would probably have been 5 to 10 years. I would have been 60 years old. If you're ever going to do anything else in your life, there's a time to do that. And I think as an astronaut, I was over 50. You know, I had some incredible experiences, had a lot of opportunity after this flight. It just made sense.
Well, just one more question that I can't resist asking. Are you more of a Star Trek fan or a Star Wars fan?
I like them both. Which one am I more of a fan of? I like the lightsaber. Both of them had pretty good artificial gravity.
Well, Scott, Captain Kelly, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you.
That's Scott Kelly. He worked as an astronaut for NASA for 2 decades. His memoir is Endurance, A Year in Space, A Lifetime of Discovery. Kelly was interviewed by HBR Assistant Editor Josh Olijars. Discover more about the world's leaders and their strategies by subscribing to HBR's monthly leadership newsletter. Sign up at hbr.org/email-newsletters. Thanks for listening to the HBR IdeaCast. I'm Sarah Green Carmichael.